Get your fill of baseball news and beer reviews at foulballarea.com. Follow our blog for the latest news around the baseball world and read about some of our favorite ballpark beers. Tune into the podcast every Wednesday as we take a deep dive into the topics of the day. Stay connected by signing up for our mailing list or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at foulballarea. Now, here's today's episode of the Foulball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins and Trey Lyle. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foulball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. We've got a really good one for you. A lot of stuff going on around the baseball world this week with the trade deadline going down this Monday. Bunch of great stuff happening in the games. Really exciting stuff from all the teams around Major League Baseball. We'll get into some of the most exciting young teams a little bit later on in today's episode. And then Trey's favorite team, the Yankees, they're not looking too great right now, so we're going to dive into that a little bit towards the end of today's edition of Foul Ball Area. Joining me again, as always, is my co-host Trey Lyle. Trey, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, you know, just living it up and having a good time. Unfortunately, baseball not going as expected, but I think with the expanded playoffs and the injuries that my team is having, they'll be okay still making the playoffs, and that's the goal at this point. Just make it in, and hopefully they'll be healthy by then. But we'll talk more about that later. Pretty exciting, kind of exciting trade deadline, kind of what I expected. A lot of action, but not from probably the team we expected, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of stuff did go down. Nothing too big. I mean, some pretty big names were moved, but nothing.
Would you say Clevinger was the best player?
I'd say that's the biggest move. Yeah,
I think it showed me. I think the Padres realized, and it's just kind of what I was saying. I was like, there's going to be a team that you probably don't expect to realize, hey, we can go all in. And the Padres got hot right before the trade deadline. They realized we have a shot at this. I don't know. I don't think they're going to win the division. I think the Dodgers are just so. But I think they're well on their way to making the playoffs. And they decided to go all in, but at the same time, they really didn't give up their big pieces in their farm system. So it was a good day if you're a Padres fan to kind of see the moves they were making.
Before we dive too much more into that, we have some business to take care of. Last week on the podcast, we talked about our bet on the Braves-Yankees series this season. They played four games against each other this season. They ended up splitting the four games throughout the season. The Yankees won the first two earlier in the year, and the Braves won the last two. Yeah, when they were good. The Braves won the last two last Wednesday. They just clobbered Gerrit Cole, I think three home runs off of him in the game, and then they won a closer game, 2-1, in the second game of that doubleheader on Wednesday. So they split the four-game series for the year. So we go to the run differential, and I think the Yankees won it 17-16. So the Yankees win the series on the season. You win the bet. Trey, which charity am I writing a check to?
So obviously, during these times, I think Feeding America should be the one we go to. Obviously, during COVID, a lot of families needing food right now. I think that's the best one I can do. During these times, definitely did a little research. I almost thought about going a little personal with some of my medical stuff, but I figured – let's go with Feeding America, great organization. And I believe that you're going to have to be donating to Feeding America. And that was all the fun having this little bet. And you know what? We might have to go double or nothing if my prediction's right. We have a Yankees-Braves World Series. So we'll see what happens with that.
All right. So I'll make sure to get that check right and get that out to Feeding America later this week.
Also, if you can donate to Feeding America or any charity that's helping families during this time, please do so if you can. Understand during these times are great. So this was a fun bet, and if I unfortunately lost and the Braves scored two more runs, or if they scored one run, I guess we both have to. I would have been glad to do it, but luckily can save. But luckily, this is all going to a good cause.
So with that business out of the way, let's dive into the trade deadline. It went down this past Monday. Trade deadline was 4 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, August 31st. A little bit of a different trade deadline than usual because we're only 30 games into the season, but in this shortened season, that is halfway through the 2020 MLB season. So with 30 games under their belt, teams have to decide whether or not they're really going to contend or if they're ready to sell. Plus, with the expanded playoffs, you have more teams that are in contention, and so you have fewer sellers at the deadline. So let's go over some of the moves, the biggest moves that did happen this year. The Braves, they only made one move at the deadline. I was a little disappointed. They got starting pitcher Tommy Malone from the Orioles. The Cubs got Jose Martinez. The Phillies acquired pitcher David Phelps. The Mets acquired Robinson Chirinos and Todd Frazier. The Dodgers traded away starting pitcher Ross Stripling for a player to be named later. The Cubs acquired outfielder Cameron Maybin from the Tigers. The Rockies got outfielder Kevin Pillar from the Red Sox. The Reds got pitcher Archie Bradley from the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Blue Jays acquired Jonathan Villar from the Marlins and Robbie Ray from the Diamondbacks. The A's got starting pitcher Mike Minor from the Texas Rangers. The Marlins got Starling Marte from the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the team that made the most moves, like you said, the most aggressive team. I mean, it was just crazy how aggressive they went at this deadline. I don't think I've ever seen a team make this many moves in one trade deadline. The San Diego Padres acquired relief pitcher Trevor Rosenthal, designated hitter Mitch Moreland, catchers Jason Castro and Austin Nola, and starting pitcher Mike Clevinger. A great trade deadline from the San Diego Padres. I think they are set up for success for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it was it's pretty interesting to see because I think most people said the Padres are still a year away with their really good farm system, but they have great pieces in place with Tatis, Machado, Hosmer. I think, but wow, getting a guy like Mike Clevinger is big because their weakness was starting pitching. If you look at the Padres and the way they're playing late, we've said it all along. If you get hot, you got a really good shot at making the playoffs. And that's what the Padres have done of late. They've gotten really hot and they're playing really good baseball and you know, they can rake. And right now they need arms in the pitching staff. And, they had a little versatility in their lineup, especially with trying to figure out the DH position, and the NL is always going to be big for these NL teams not used to it. So, yeah, you have to give their hats off because you give them respect. And they also – they went all in this year, but they also got players with a little bit more team control because I believe Clevinger still has 3 years left on his deal. He's not a free agent this year, so that's going to be big. And plus, like after all this, they're still ranked as – I think they were number one in the farm system, and now they're number two. Like, they got rid of their seventh and ninth best prospect, I think is what they did. And in a good farm system, that's big. And for the Indians, they kind of – well, we knew their pitching staff was for the other side of the deal. Their pitching staff is what's kind of been leading them. They need bats, and they got a couple of solid bats on their end. So both two contending teams that kind of improved, and basically the Indians had an excess of pitchers – Padres had an excess of batters, and they switched.
When you can make as many moves and acquire as many players as the Padres did while giving up as little as they did, that's a great deadline. You got to be really happy with what they got out of that. I mean, so they got Mitch Moreland to fill that DH role. He's a solid hitter. He's going to be really good for them. They have Trevor Rosenthal, who is widely considered the best reliever on the market. They were able to get him from the Kansas City Royals.
He closed the game last night against this is Tuesday night on Monday night against the Rockies. Shout out to that because I picked the I bet on the Padres on the run line, and I was watching at the end, and Rosenthal closed it out for me. So shout out. And he obviously was playing for Kansas City, and that was one of the Royals' best players going in, and he's been pitching well for them and led into the Padres.
They got Austin Nola, who's a very solid catcher, and Jason Castro, more of a veteran guy behind the plate. And then Mike Clevinger, who was probably the best starting pitcher that was going to be available at this deadline. There were rumors that Lance Lynn would be available from the Texas Rangers. He ended up not getting traded. He is still with the Rangers. So Mike Clevinger was probably the best starting pitcher available. So far this season, he's 1-1 with a 3.18 ERA, 21 strikeouts in 22 and two-thirds innings pitched. Of course, he has missed some time because he broke COVID-19 protocol with the team, ended up getting optioned to their alternate training site. So he missed a couple of starts there, but he came back up with the team and has made his return to the Major League roster. Now he is with the Padres, and their rotation going into the last month of the season and the playoffs, they have Garrett Richards, they have Chris Paddock, they have Denelson Lamet, and now Mike Clevinger. They are going to be set for success, and that's what you really need in the postseason is pitching. So they've got four quality starting pitchers plus Trevor Rosenthal to round out the bullpen. You're right. They might not win the division, but they are definitely going to make a run once they get to the postseason.
Yeah, I still favor the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers have now cleared themselves as the best team in baseball, especially with the Yankee struggles, because coming into the season, we said there's two teams and kind of that next group who could make a run, could not. But yeah, I think if you're the Padres, you're a team that you're looking up and you see the Dodgers and you're like, that's the team we're going to have to contend with. And you need a good pitching staff against the Dodgers. So hats off to them. I think getting a guy like Clevinger is going to be big because he could be a number two, number three starter for a championship team, I think, down the line. Because I think the Padres right now are just missing that front end ace, like what the Yankees hoped with Gerrit Cole. I know we're going to get into that a little bit later and share each other's concerns about that. And so I think for the Padres to do these kind of moves, they're realizing, look, we got a really good team and we have the NL MVP. We need to make the playoffs. And so they made moves to do that, plain and simple. They made moves. They were a team that has been kind of, I don't want to say biding its time till now, similar to what like Houston did before Houston went on their run. I think the Padres kind of like that. They bided their time. They didn't play really good baseball. They made one big free agent move, and that was getting Manny Machado and Eric. I guess Hosmer would have been a little bit of a big one, but obviously Machado is the big name. And now they're starting to put the pieces in place where I think they're going to make the playoffs this year, and I think they have a shot to advance. I think come next year is really where we're going to look at the Padres as a team that could win the NL West.
So the Padres, we agree they had probably the best trade deadline. Most people around Major League Baseball would say they had the best trade deadline.
Oakland is second. I would put Oakland two to get a starting pitcher for a team that's playing. I'm going to say it right now. I think the A's are the best team in the AL. I think the Rays have been kind of lucky with the Yankees' injuries to play. That's why their records the way they are. I think I'm going to favor Oakland right now in the American League. And to get a solid starting pitcher like they did from Texas and not really give up that much has been pretty solid. I think getting a guy like Mike Minor who's shown ability to be that front-end starter, one of the solid starter in our league, is going to be big for a team. Because what's hurt the A's has been pitching. And that's historically, I mean, they've had great lineups. They have consistency from their bat. They need arms. And so, I think the A's getting Mike Minor, kind of a move that went under the radar, but I think a move that could wind up the A's advancing deep into the postseason.
Some of the other teams that made moves at the deadline, I got to tell you, as a Braves fan, I am really, really disappointed with what they did. They were linked to rumors saying they were going to get Mike Clevinger, saying they were going to go out and get Lance Lynn, maybe Kevin Gausman from the Giants, all quality starting pitchers. And they go out there and they get Tommy Malone from the Baltimore Orioles. Malone on the year is 1-4 with a 5.68 ERA, 33 strikeouts in 31 and two-thirds innings pitched. Not great. And then they acquire him from the Orioles. He goes out in his first start on Sunday night against the Phillies. He lasts 2 1/3 innings, gives up 7 runs on 8 hits, 2 home runs, and strikes out 2 batters. Not a great first outing. I don't know why this is the guy that they went out and acquired. They really should have made a bigger push to get one of those guys like Lynn or Clevinger or even Gausman. Any of them would have been better than Malone, in my opinion. I'm just really disappointed with what the Braves did at this deadline. I don't understand the reasoning behind it, but that's what we'll have to live with. I did see a report yesterday from David O'Brien of The Athletic saying that Mike Foltynewicz was pitching well down at the alternate training site in Gwinnett, so maybe he'll end up coming back up to the Major League roster. I'd like to see that. That'd be cool if they could have another veteran guy back in their rotation. I don't know if we should expect that, but it's a possibility. The New York
Yeah,
Mets.
Yeah, I think I was going to say on the Braves, I think some of these teams, especially contending teams, they don't know what the next offseason is going to be like. And so to kind of get rid of assets now is going to be – there's a lot of unknowns going into the next season. So I think we saw some hesitancy from the top-end teams, the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Braves. By top end, I mean in terms of teams we expected to be at the top end this year. Obviously, the Yankees are going to make the playoffs. I'm not putting them as a top end team now. I'm just using that as an example. But they don't know fans are going to be here next year. And I think that was a concern for some teams. Like, do we bring on big contracts when we don't know what our revenue is going to be like over the next year? I think that laid some hesitancy because a name that I was shocked by to be up was Josh Hader. from the Brewers. He was linked to the Dodgers. And if the Dodgers made the move for Josh Hader, and you can get a guy like Kinsley Jansen and Josh Hader in your bullpen, it's a wrap. It's over. I would give the Dodgers the title now, because that's – I mean, they have maybe the best starting pitching, and now they're going to get two all-star level closers at the end, plus their lineup. Like, that would have been – it's a wrap. It's a wrap. But the Dodgers didn't want to sell cheap contracts, basically, or good money for them, because they were unsure about really ticket sales for next year if they're going to have fans at games. So I think that's why we saw some hesitancy on the really big moves going in. I heard Buster only talk about that on ESPN. So I wanted to throw that in there as well. Maybe why you didn't see these upper echelon teams, or teams you would expect maybe that needed to make that one Justin Verlander kind of move. It's not going to be there in this time, because there's so many uncertainties from a financial point of view.
Some of the other moves: the New York Mets acquired catcher Robinson Chirinos and third baseman Todd Frazier. Frazier had played with them from 2018 to 2019. He was with the Rangers to begin this season. Now he goes back to New York to rejoin the Mets. The Cubs got outfielder Cameron Maybin from the Tigers. Maybin has just been kind of an average guy throughout his career. He's had some flashes, great moments, but, you know, kind of an average guy. Provides a little bit of depth for the Cubs. The Rockies get Kevin Pillar, who, in my opinion, is one of the best defensive outfielders in the league. I think he's gotten robbed when it comes to Gold Glove awards a couple of times. He was with the Red Sox this year. He's moved around a bit, spent a few years with the Toronto Blue Jays, went to the Giants, then the Red Sox. Now he's with the Rockies. I think he deserves better. Someone needs to commit to him and give him a longer shot at being a consistent starting center fielder. The Reds get Archie Bradley from the Diamondbacks. The Blue Jays get Robbie Ray from the Diamondbacks. And the Marlins get Starling Marte from the Diamondbacks. So the Diamondbacks are just getting rid of everybody. I don't know what their plan is out there in Arizona, but they're not having a great season, so might as well just scrap it all and rebuild, I guess. So that is our trade deadline recap. The San Diego Padres, a great bunch of moves at this year's deadline. Some other moves throughout the league. Nothing too exciting. No really big blockbuster trade, but just the fact that the Padres made so many trades is what really shocked a lot of people, I think. They were just so aggressive, and they're really, really going all in on winning this season, and I think they have a good shot. And that leads us into our next topic on which team is the most exciting team in Major League Baseball. I think it's down to two different teams, the San Diego Padres and the Chicago White Sox. When you look at the way these organizations are playing, the way their games are playing out, the way they're ending, I mean, a lot of dramatic finishes from these two teams. They're very exciting to watch, very fun, very entertaining. I can't decide which team is the most exciting, because it's just too close between the two of them. You have Fernando Tatis Jr. with the Padres, and Manny Machado is still doing great things for them. Eric Hosmer having a little bit of a career resurgence. And then in Chicago with the White Sox, you have Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Yoán Moncada, Jose Abreu. They're pitching with Lucas Giolito and Dallas Keuchel. I can't pick a team for which one is more exciting.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would lean with the Padres. I think they've been my favorite team to watch this year. The Cubs have been fun front half of the season. Obviously, I throw the Dodgers in too, because they're just so good, kind of watching the best. And then I'm going to throw the Houston Astros in, just because I like to see them struggle. Like, when they struggle, it feels good to watch them. Like, that's it. Like, Jose Altuve has been playing god-awful this year, and it's been fun to watch.
Well, I think all of the players that I listed from the Padres and the White Sox are certainly in the conversation for end-of-season awards. You have Fernando Tatis Jr., who is hitting .313 on the season with a .395 on-base percentage and a .660 slugging percentage. He has 13 home runs and 33 RBIs. He hit a two-run triple on Monday in the Padres' win over the Rockies. Then you have Manny Machado, who was just named National League Player of the Week for the second consecutive week. He's hitting .303 on the season with a .377 on-base percentage and a .606 slugging percentage, 11 home runs, 30 RBIs. This is the player that the Padres hoped to get when they signed him to that long deal last offseason. I mean, last year he hit just .256 with a .796 OPS. That's not what they were hoping to get when they signed Manny Machado. So the way he's playing this year, that's really the kind of player that they expected when they brought him in on this really long deal into San Diego. And I think that it's really fun to watch Machado have a turnaround year this season.
Yeah, he was an AL player or NL player of the week this past week. So he showed how it happened. Also, you want to talk about the White Sox? First no hitter happened last week by it was a Luis. What's his last name?
Lucas Giolito.
Lucas Giolito. That's the name. I knew it was something like that. I was close. I just want to say I was close. But he, of course, the first no hitter of the season happened. But also, something interesting also happened this since we've last recorded. Do you know that every number has now been played, or at least worn and played by a player in a game in Major League Baseball? So I'll start out, according to Baseball References Register, the numbers 86, 89, and 92 are the three numbers in the history of baseball that have never been played by a player in a game. So this is obviously from 0 to 99, which are the numbers you can have in on a baseball uniform. So those are all three have been used. So first happened is Cardinals reliever Giannis Cabrera wore 92 for the first time in Major League Baseball history when he took the mound on August 15th. Jesus Cruz wore 86 when he pitched three nights later. And then Cruz won an unofficial race for 86 when the Marlins lefty Brandon Lambert, who also had the but he didn't debut until August 23rd. So two people have worn 86 this year. And then finally, the number 89 had been worn on August 20th. It is when he Miguel Yair got called up. Yairi got called up on August 20th, and he didn't play until last night for the Yankees. He wore the number 89. So now every number in the history of baseball has been played. So is that more interesting? Is it interesting how the Yankees, now no player, if you play for the Yankees, can wear a single digit number other than zero because of how their numbers are retired?
Yeah, that's
or
true.
The fact that every number has been played.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is pretty surprising. I mean, I am surprised that it took this long for every single number to be taken in Major League Baseball. You don't really see a lot of those high numbers like 89 or 99, like Aaron Judge or Manny Ramirez when he was with the Dodgers. You don't really see a lot of those high numbers, but you are starting to see them now. You see, I mean, now that every number has been taken, you see 89, you see Jose Abreu with the White Sox wears 79. Luis Robert, one of the guys we were just talking about, he wears number 88. By the way, I'm really considering getting either a Luis Robert or a Fernando Tatis Jr. jersey. I've never
I said if the Braves win the World Series, I'd buy you a
Puig jersey, Yasiel Puig.
He's
not even with the team.
He had a sign with the team. Sorry.
I've never bought a jersey for a team that I'm not a fan of. Like, the only jerseys I've ever had are Braves jerseys. But these guys, like Tatis and Robert, they're just so fun to watch. I might just have to buy one of them.
I just have a Jeter jersey. So I do have a question. So obviously both of us played Little League. What was your number as a kid?
Oh,
and
man,
why?
I don't even remember.
Or if you could pick your number, because sometimes it's just like randomly chosen. So like I had a number I wanted.
If I could pick my number, I think one year I did get to pick. I picked number 10 because Chipper Jones, obviously. But another number I just like number 21 because it's my birthday. It's my lucky number. So 21 is always the number that I go with for things like that.
So for me, my number has always been 8, and it's because of Dale Earnhardt Jr., the race car driver, was always my favorite driver. He's probably my favorite athlete of all time. And he obviously, when I first became a fan, drove the number 8 Bud car, and then it moved to 88. So I've always had 8. Like anytime I create a player or something, I give him the number 8 unless I want to have. So it's just been not like the number 8. Like you would have those. I remember taking photos as a kid, and you would get the baseball cards. Like if you took the – you would pick that as one of your options, and I would have always the number 8, man. So my number will always be number 8. Obviously, 2 is good, a good number for me, being a big Jeter fan like I am. But number 8 will always be, you know, my number if I had to pick. So, like, when we play in our murals and we had to have a number, I would put the number 8 on my back.
With 21. I'd always go with 21. So. That's my number. But you know, I don't really play any kind of video games or anything anymore. But when I was younger and I play like MLB The Show or something like that, and I do the creative player, I'd always try to put him on the Braves. But I couldn't make him number 21 because they've retired number 21. It was Warren Spahn's number, so had to pick another number back when I was playing that. But 21 is my number. That's what I'd go for if I could pick it. All right, real quick, before we move on to our final segment of the day, we're going to talk about the Yankees and their struggles recently. But before we do that, we've got some This Day in Baseball History to go over. It's Wednesday, September 2nd. This day in 1998, Sammy Sosa hit his 56th home run of the season, tying the franchise record set by Hack Wilson in 1930. The Cubs won 4-2 over the Cincinnati Reds at Wrigley Field. 98 was, of course, the season of the famed home run chase between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. In 1999, Cal Ripken Jr. hit his 400th home run of his career at Camden Yards. He was the 29th major leaguer to reach the 400 mark at the time. And we're also going to include September 1st on this day in baseball history because on September 1st, 1996, Alex Rodriguez's bat was taken away after Orioles manager Davey Johnson suspected it was corked. Ken Griffey Jr. let him use his bat, and Rodriguez hit a three-run home run as the Mariners won 5-1 over the Orioles. Also on September 1st.
Fun fact about that, I'm only saying this because you mentioned it. I watched that video. ESPN tweeted about that just right before, so pretty interesting.
Also on September 1st, just last season, Justin Verlander threw his third no-hitter of his career. He struck out 14 batters as the Astros beat the Blue Jays 2-0. Justin Verlander, the pride of Goochland.
Yes.
Do they call him that? They should if they don't.
Pride it. He went to ODU, obviously. 804 stand-up. I do have something. So Jeff Passan, I at least saw this on the Pat McAfee show. I think he's tweeted about this. But baseball is now kind of targeting a bubble system for the postseason where I think he said the NL would play in Arizona and the AL would play in California and or Texas maybe for the NL. And the final would be in Arlington, obviously at Globe Life Park, the new home for the Texas Rangers. So it looks like a bubble system might happen in the near future. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm a fan of it.
I was going to just say it's proven to work.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I mean, we've seen so many outbreaks in Major League Baseball this season that when it gets to the postseason, you can't risk that. Because what are you going to do if you have an outbreak in one of the series? All the other series are still able to go on. What do you do? I mean, how long do you postpone it? Do you just say that the team with the outbreak is done? You're out of the playoffs. Goodbye. See you next year. I don't know what you do. So I think you have to do a bubble format for the postseason because you just can't risk having an outbreak of COVID-19 once you get into the playoffs and delaying the playoffs even further into the fall and winter when the virus could, you know, probably will get a lot worse. So we can't risk that. So I think you got to go with a bubble format once you get to the playoffs. And yeah, it is proven to work. Like the NHL and the NBA, they've been doing great with theirs.
And the WNBA.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would be
also something that happened this past week, I think we should probably touch on, is multiple Major League Baseball games got postponed after, obviously, the story in the NBA, starting with the Milwaukee Bucks, and then happened in the WNBA with the players striking their games due to racial injustice, and obviously a lot that went into that. I think I think you'll agree with me on this opinion that you kind of give your hats off to the players who are taking control and allowing them to express their feelings and their frustration, which is warranted if you are, I mean, obviously myself or you can't fully understand what it's like to be Black in America. But I think with the times we are in and just seeing that kind of powerful moment, I remember on Friday, was it, or Thursday, sitting there and just saying to myself, like, I'm witnessing American history, not just sports history, like history, like American history over those couple of days. I believe it was 11 games off the top of my head got canceled. Obviously the big moment came with the Marlins and the Phillies, I want to say. Marlins and the Phillies.
I think it was the Marlins and the Mets.
Marlins and the Mets. That's it. Yes. So they took the field and then they obviously left and didn't have the game. So, hats off to the Major League Baseball players for what they did. And obviously the NBA kind of starting it. The WNBA did their own thing as well. WNBA, if you want to give a shout out to those women, they've been really at the forefront of this all along. So it was really cool to see all these sports leagues. The NHL did something as well to kind of put the bigger picture in our country above themselves. So it was really cool to see. Hopefully more positive things come out of it.
Yeah, you got to respect the players for standing up and doing what they think is right in this moment. Trey, you keep bringing up other topics. I think you're really just trying to delay the conversation about the Yankees looking really, really rough and Gerrit Cole just not being the pitcher that they thought they were getting when they signed him this offseason.
To his credit, before he played the Braves, he hadn't lost in like a year. So I think at this point, like, you can expect 2 to 3 bad games from him. I think it's okay. Like, he's proven he's still shown Gerrit Cole stuff, maybe not as good as Houston, but I think with the weird season it's been, expect a little bit of the unexpected, and your rhythm's a little bit different when it's a lot of start and stop, which the Yankees have had plenty of that throughout this season. So I'm okay with it. I think if the Yankees make the playoffs and Gerrit Cole shows what he's done in the last 2 weeks, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But if I see Gerrit Cole be Gerrit Cole in the postseason as a Yankees fan, I will feel okay about it. So I am mildly concerned. I'm more concerned about the injuries when it comes to the Yankees than I am about Gerrit Cole struggling, because I feel like come postseason time, it will be corrected.
You know, I think the Yankees are definitely going to make the postseason. It's just a question of what they do once they get there. And right now, I'm not so sure they would do much, but they do have a really talented roster. They just need to get him healthy, and they need to figure out what's going on with Gerrit Cole, because in his last two outings, he gave up 3 home runs to the Braves on August 26th and 2 home runs to the Rays this past Monday. So a couple of rough outings back-to-back for Cole, but, I mean, he's obviously a very talented once-in-a-generation pitcher, and I'm sure he will get it figured out before too long, but just have to wait and see what the Yankees do once it gets time for the postseason. That's all we've got for today's episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Looking forward to all the baseball going down this week. I'm going to try to watch some Padres and White Sox games if I can, because, like I said, they are the two most exciting teams in baseball. They're very fun to watch. They make baseball – I mean, baseball is already great, but they just make it so much more entertaining. So for Trey Lau, I'm Matthew Atkins. We'll see you all next week.
Adios, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.